Today we have another true English story from Josep from Barcelona and a true story from me, Craig, on this week's episode of
Aprender Inglés with Razan Craig.
If you are a new listener to this podcast, welcome. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. With over 45 years of teaching between us, Reza and I are going to help you grow your grammar, perfect your pronunciation, and vocalize your vocabulary. How are you doing, Reza?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Craig?
I'm fantastic, thank you. Wonderful. To start this week, we have a question from Lucia, who wrote on the website the following.
Hello, Reza and Craig. I'm writing as I listen to you, and I was wondering, is it okay to say, if I could go to the party, I would? Or, I could go to the party if I would? She continues, is it needed to say, that's wrong, Lucia. You mean, do I need to say, I could go to the party if I would mind it, or if I would care about it, or if I would like it, adding a subject. I hope you understand what I'm trying to ask, Lucia. Well, thanks for your message, Lucia.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And her first example sounded fine to me, didn't it, Reza? If I could go to the party, I would.
Yeah. Si pudiera ir, lo haría. Iría. No problem.
Yeah. For example, I mean, I don't speak Japanese. I have no idea how to say anything in Japanese. However, if I could speak Japanese, then I would. Of course, I would speak it. So it's a hypothetical situation. That's fine, Lucia. What about her second example?
Now, that didn't sound right to me when she said, I could go to the party if I would. No. That's not. You got it the wrong way around. It's I would go to the party if I could. So the second one doesn't sound right.
You can change the position of the if, but you can't mess around too much with the woulds and the coulds. So your first example, Lucia, was if I could go to the party, I would. So you could put the if clause second. I would go to the party if I could. But the could has to stay with if.
Because it's second conditional. You're hypothesizing or speculating. So if always goes with the past. If I could, could is the past of can. And then the result, I would is always the result. You can't mix those two things.
And then Lucia's second example includes a subject. So she said, I could go to the party if I would mind it. No, that's wrong. Mm. And so is, I could go to the party if I would care about it. No, you can't say that, Lucia.
I think what you want to say, Lucia, here is, I could go to the party if I wanted to. That's what I would say.
Or to use your examples, you could say, I don't mind going to the party, or I don't care about going to the party. But you couldn't put it with your conditional sentence.
Ah, okay, right. So that's a different meaning then. You think she's saying, yeah, okay. She's saying que no me molestaría ir al...
No me importa. Yeah, no me molestaría. I don't mind. I don't mind. And then you need the gerund. I don't mind going to the party.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't mind going for a drink.
But if you say, I don't care about going to the party, that means you don't really want to because it's not important to you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Well, Lucia, I hope that answers your question. Thanks very much for writing.
Yep. Thanks very much. Our second comment today, also on the website, is from Maite. And it's connected to Jose's true story that he recently told on episode 159. So to listen to Jose's story, go to inglespodcast.com/159. That's Jose from Valencia. What does Maite say about his story, Reza?
Maite writes, hi to everyone. It's Maite again. That must be Maite from Shativa, is it?
I think it is, yeah.
Maite from Shativa, hello. It's Maite again. I'll be delighted to take part in your podcast for a while. I hope so. I only wanted to say that Jose's true story is one of the most gripping stories I have ever heard.
That's a nice expression. A gripping story.
Gripping, it grips your attention. It grabs your attention.
To grip is to hold tightly, isn't it? To really hold with a lot of force. So the story really gripped, mate.
Not only because of the story itself, but because of the way in which Jose explains every detail and the intonation he puts on it. Yes, I quite agree. It was well told. Just to remind you, it was the story about Jose nearly dying when he was a child. So it was a very gripping story.
Yeah, he nearly drowned. So if you want to hear that gripping story, again, episode 159. And if you want to send us a story, before you do that, go listen to episode 137, which is how to tell a story in English. So inglespodcast.com/137. That will help you to tell a better story. And many thanks to people who have sent us stories. Marcelo, Mamen, Jose, of course, Ivan, and today, Giuseppe.
So, shall we listen to Giuseppe's true English story?
Yes, let's do it. Giuseppe speaks about diving, and he speaks about scuba diving, S-C-U-B-A. That's the diving where you go under the water, sometimes quite deep, and you use compressed air tanks. So you have the air on your back. And Giuseppe said that it's his field, it's su campo, it's what he does, it's his job. So diving, scuba diving, is Giuseppe's field. And he asked the question if we knew that SCUBA, for scuba diving, buceo, it's an acronym. Did you know that?
I did actually, yeah.
Do you remember what the letters stand for? Stand for means represent?
Yep, I think I do. It's self-contained underwater breathing apparatus.
Yep.
So in other words, you have to use the special equipment. If you don't use special equipment, then it's not scuba diving. It's another type of diving.
Yeah, that's snorkeling. S-N-O-R-K-E-L-L-I-N-G. Using a snorkel, which is a tube that goes into your mouth when you're under the water and then goes up into the air so that you can breathe.
So snorkeling is without the compressed air tanks and scuba diving is with the compressed air tanks, right?
Yes. Snorkel is the thing you use. Snorkel is the breathing tube. And to go snorkeling, the activity is snorkeling. So you've got diving and you've got snorkeling. Have you ever been snorkeling?
Never.
Oh, it's really good fun. It's great. Yep. You can go very close to here down the coast to Javier or Denia, where the water is a bit clearer and there are more fish. And it's quite fun, just snorkeling, looking at the fish. It's beautiful.
Of course, you could just go diving without anything, not even a tube, and that would just be diving.
Then. Right.
So snorkeling means you got the tube, scuba with the oxygen tanks. But I have been diving without any equipment, just kind of going down to the bottom of the sea, not very far out into sea, obviously, to see what I could find. And that was fun. But nothing compared to Giuseppe, as you will hear in a minute.
Then, of course, there's the verb to dive, which means to go into the water head first. And, of course, there's a sport, skydiving, where you jump from an aeroplane.
Yeah, the word diving is a tricky word, isn't it? Because it's kind of ambiguous in English. Diving, as Craig said, means going into the water head first. But it also means going under the water, which are two different things, really, but they're both diving in English, but they're different words in Spanish.
Yeah.
The type of diving we're going to talk about now is bucear, buceo.
Exactly.
But diving from the land into a swimming pool, for example, that's not buceo. But we call that diving as well in English.
And when it's a noun, it means a horrible place, a dive, un sitio cutre. Like there's this bar in my area, in my neighborhood, and it's a right dive. It's horrible. It's seedy. It's depressing. It's a dive. Don't go there. That's the noun.
Shall we hear Giuseppe's story?
So before we listen to Giuseppe's wonderful story about diving in the Maldives, let's give you three questions to listen for and try to answer these questions as you're listening. Remember, they are on the website. If you want to read these questions and practice your comprehension, you can find them at inglespodcast.com/171. Reza, what's question number one?
First question is this. Why did Joseph go to the Maldives?
Question number two. How many years did Joseph stay in the Maldives?
And the third question is, what does Joseph suggest as a way of improving your English?
Okay, those are your three questions. Why did he go to the Maldives? How many years did he stay in the Maldives? And what does he suggest as a way of improving your English? So now, here's Joseph's true English story.
Hi there. Hi, everyone. This is Joseph from Barcelona. And I thought that I could come up today with a true story somehow. And okay, there it goes. That's my true story, or one of them, maybe. I've been always, since I was a teenager, very keen on learning English due to, well, family reasons, etc. And I also went to the official school of languages here in Barcelona for 5 years. I did the 5 years term. But then somehow I end up living in the Maldives. That sounds exotic, and so it is. I am a dive instructor, and I teach people how to dive. And I had a dive school here nearby, near Barcelona. And I travel a lot sometimes. And then 1 year I went to the Maldives, and I was thrilled by the beauty of that country. And so I applied for a job over there in one of the resorts, and I was lucky enough to get the job. So off I went with my, at those days, my girlfriend. So we both went to this place, and of course, you must speak English, otherwise you wouldn't get a job over there, plus other languages, preferably. So, well, I went for a six-month contract, and actually I ended up staying 16 years, nonetheless. So 16 years in the Maldives, now I'm 52, so it's a couple of years I'm back. And what I wanted to say is that when I went there, and I had already a few years of background in studying English, I thought I knew English good enough to communicate, and that was true. But for me, getting to know people, staff working together from many different countries, English speakers and non-English speakers, but all of them, all of us communicating in English, it was a huge school. I learned a lot of real English, let's say, the ones that people really speak, not the academic one, but the real one. And, well, how to distinguish or how to understand a British from Scottish or a Canadian or a Kiwi or maybe an Aussie or South Africans, people that they all speak English, but they have different accents, plus the non-English speakers like Germans or French or other nationalities with their particular accent and so on and so forth. So for me, it was a great experience. And what I wanted to tell, or the bottom line behind all this long story, sorry about that, is that for people, for whoever wants to really improve and perfection their English, if you had the chance, I would strongly recommend everyone to spend a couple of years in a foreign country, preferably, obviously, a British speaker country. But just, you know, take the chance, go for your adventure if you can, and spend a few years, a couple of years at least, in a foreign country, and then you really improve your English rapidly and a lot. Well, once again, sorry, guys, for such a long story, and thank you for your patience. Sunny regards. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Very interesting. Wonderful, wonderful story. What did you think, Reza?
Yes, I enjoyed it, and I hope our listeners enjoyed the story as well. I think real-life true stories are always the best stories because life is stranger than fiction at times, isn't it?
And because we've known Josep for a while, if you remember, he sent us our first video that we asked for, and he's been a wonderful contributor to the podcast. Now we know a little more about him, and I think that's wonderful. I had no idea that his field was scuba diving, that he's an instructor, and that he lived in the Maldives. So, yeah, very interesting. So let's answer the three questions we gave you. The first one was, why did Josep go to the Maldives? So what's the answer?
Well, most people go to the Maldives on holiday. It's a very popular resort, a destination for holidays. But not Josep. He went there to teach people how to dive. He got a job.
Yep.
He went to be a diving instructor in the Maldives.
Second question, how many years did Josep stay in the Maldives? Did you hear that?
Yes. Well, some people might have been confused. He originally got a 6-month contract, but actually he stayed for 16 years.
Wow.
16 years.
Must have been a wonderful place to live.
What about the last question, which was, what does Josep suggest as a way of improving your English?
Well, he said, go and live and work in an English-speaking country for a couple of years. Or 16 years, why not? But go and live somewhere else and integrate yourself into the English-speaking community. Speak to as many people as possible. That is, I think we both agree, the best thing you can do to improve your English. Yeah.
Didn't he say that at one stage he worked in a group of, I think it was 9 people worked together, and there were Germans and French and Italian and Spanish. And when they were all together, they spoke in English.
Yeah.
Even though perhaps it wasn't the native language of any of them.
And I think you can really hear and recognize when Josep speaks that being exposed to English over so many years, he really has captured a lot of the word stress, intonation, communication skills of verbal English. So he really has improved his speaking incredibly by being exposed to native speakers and non-native speakers living abroad.
Above all, perhaps even above all of those very important points that Craig mentioned, the fact that he was speaking English every day for 16 years, you can tell that Josep's just very confident.
Yeah.
And that confidence is at least half the battle, as we say in English. Half the battle means half of what you need to do, at least, if not more. And Josep has that confidence.
And that confidence comes with practice, with exposure to the language, with living and breathing the language every day over a period of time. He says that he ended up living in the Maldives. Is it Maldives or Maldives?
I've heard both pronunciations, actually.
Let's say Maldives because it reminds me of diving. Yeah. Maldives. to end up means to finish. So that phrasal verb, end up, it means finished at the end. So he ended up, and it's followed by a gerund because of the preposition. He ended up living in the Maldives. Does he use any other interesting expressions?
He did use a very nice expression. He said he was thrilled by the beauty of the country. That's a nice expression because it's very descriptive and it's interesting vocabulary. Rather than just saying he liked, to say that he was thrilled by something. If something thrills you, it excites you or it causes a lot of enthusiasm in you. He was thrilled by the beauty of the country. That's a very good expression.
Yeah, I like that one too. He also said, off I went. He said, oh, off I went to the Maldives. And I like that expression. It just means I went, but it's nice and colloquial. Off I went. Off I went to the Maldives.
He also used a nice compound adjective. He said he got a 6-month contract. He could have said a contract of 6 months, but it's much shorter and it sounds much more like a native speaker if you say a 6-month contract.
Yeah. We've spoken about that before. We did a podcast on compound adjectives.
Yeah.
And at the end, he said the bottom line is, which means the result, the conclusion, the summing up, the bottom line is. So if you listen to this podcast, for example, the bottom line is you will improve your English. Did you hear anything that he could improve, that Josep could improve from his message?
Well, nobody's perfect, Josep, although let me tell you, you were very, very good. But funnily enough, talking about the word perfect, you said that you needed to perfection it, was it he said, or perfection his English or something like that? It wasn't right.
I think he used the noun instead of the verb. He said perfection instead of perfect.
He needed to perfection something, but you need to perfect. That's the verb. And remember, of course, the adjective is perfect where you stress the first syllable. Yeah, what a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Perfect day. But
Lou Reed.
Lou Reed, yeah. One of my favorite songs.
It's a perfect day.
Great song, isn't it? So that's a perfect day. But he, Josep, needed to use the verb, but he didn't. But he should have used the verb to perfect. So stress the second syllable, not the noun perfection.
Was there anything else, Reza, that you noticed or picked up on that you noticed about Josep's English?
Yes, near the beginning, Josep, I think the order of your words wasn't quite right. I think you said, I've been always interested in English. I've been always interested. So that's a present perfect. I've been interested. If you're going to put an adverb of frequency, like always, sometimes, never, usually, put it after the auxiliary and before the main verb. In other words, in the middle, you say, I have always been. You put the word always between have and been. I've always been.
So, justo antes del verbo principal.
Exactly.
Yep. For example, I've always loved chocolate.
Yes, that's true. Believe me, listen.
I've never liked celery.
Is that true?
Yeah. How do you say celery in Spanish?
Apio.
Yeah. Hate it. I hate the thing.
Oh, funny enough, me too. I hate celery too.
Do you know that celery is the only thing you can eat, I think, where you burn more calories eating it or chewing it than it actually has?
Wow. I didn't know that, but that's put me off it even more.
And that's why it tastes disgusting. Because it's very good for you. Reza and I are really happy to tell you that we've got a new sponsor, haven't we, Reza?
Yes, we're delighted to tell you about Spoken.
What is Spoken? Spoken is a way to improve your English with messenger apps. You use WhatsApp, don't you?
I do a lot. You too?
Yep, I use WhatsApp on a daily basis. Every day it's on my phone in my pocket, and that's a way that you can keep in touch with your personal private English teacher on Spoken by using a messenger app like WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, if you use that very often. You can get in touch with Spoken. The great guys over there, Henry and his teachers, will do a personal private teaching plan for you. So they'll create a special lesson plan and learning plan and help you to improve your professional English. If you use English for traveling, whatever you use, you're using your English for, Spoken, the guys at Spoken will create a special plan to help you improve it. So what, Reza, what are Spoken offering people who sign up through our website?
Well, if you sign up through englespodcast.com, you'll get two free lessons and 20% off your first month. Just go to englespodcast.com/spoken and you'll get that exclusive special offer.
That's right. Go to englespodcast.com/spoken, SPOKEN. And Reza and I would both like to thank Spoken for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Well, believe it or not, Josep is not the only person who has an interesting story specifically about diving. Craig has a true story about diving. Let's listen to Craig's story.
I don't know if I've told you this before, so this may be new to you, Reza. It will definitely be new to the listeners. But tell me if I have mentioned this, because I can't remember if I told you. I was lucky enough to go to New Zealand on holiday quite a few years ago to visit friends. I had friends who were living and working in New Zealand. And one of the things I did over there was scuba diving. Because to scuba dive, you need a license that's called PADI, P-A-D-I, which is you do a course, you get qualified to dive, you do the safety procedures, and you do practice dives with an instructor, which is, I'm sure, is what Josep does. And then you have a license to scuba dive anywhere in the world that accepts the PADI qualification. So before I left for New Zealand, I did a course here in Spain that was actually a birthday present for my then girlfriend. And I did the course in Valencia. I did, I think, two practice dives, one in a swimming pool and one down in Denia or Calpe, can't remember. And then I got my license. So off I went to New Zealand. And I'm sure the place we dived at was called Knight's Island. That's K-N-I-G-H-T. That's Caballero, not Noche. So Knight's Island is a famous area in New Zealand where there are caves and beautiful fishes and coral.
Underwater caves.
Underwater caves.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Have I told you this story?
No, not at all. Never.
Okay. So away we went on the boat to do this dive. Now, as Josep well knows, when you dive, when you scuba dive, you need to go with a partner. And that partner's called a buddy, B-U-D-D-Y. Like you have in American English, a buddy is your friend, your mate, your amigo. So your diving buddy is your partner, the person who's with you in case there's a problem. That person should always be very close to you in case you need help. Maybe you're running low on air and you need to share some air, or you have a problem with your equipment. For safety reasons, you must be with your buddy. So we paid for two dives. So the first dive, I went down with my girlfriend and we dived. It was beautiful, saw some fantastic fish. And it was a clear day, but it was very, very cold. It was in winter, so it was very, very cold. And when we came up, from the first dive, my girlfriend was shivering. She was really, really cold, drinking hot soup, and she did not want to go into the water a second time.
Were you wearing a wetsuit?
I was. I was wearing a special wetsuit because of the water was very, very cold. And I wanted to go down for my second dive because I'd paid for it, right? I mean, I'd paid the money. I want to go down and see some more fish. So I needed to go with a different buddy. So a guy I'd never met before said, oh, I'll go be your buddy. So I dived with him. And it was only my second or third dive. I was a novice. I was a beginner. I wasn't very sure of the equipment. I wasn't very comfortable in the water. As soon as I got down below the surface, my buddy disappeared.
I presume that's not supposed to happen.
That's not supposed to happen.
Do you have to maintain visual contact normally?
Yes. Okay. You need to be very close to your buddy, not necessarily in arm's length, but you need to be able to see your buddy.
Right.
And we were going towards these caves and I didn't want to go in, and he went through and I completely lost sight of him and I started to panic. And I didn't know where I was. I was very disoriented. Mm-hmm. And there's in the diving suit, you have the possibility to put air inside the suit if you want to go up. So you're breathing air and you can also put the air in your suit. So to go up, I just inflated my suit as much as I could because I panicked and I had a very severe panic attack. So I went up to the top. Too quickly. It's dangerous to go up quickly. I went up to the top. When I reached the surface, the weather had changed. It was very stormy. It was very windy. The sea was very rough. And the wind blew me away from the boat and blew me towards some rocks. And I was very, very scared. I was alone. I couldn't swim back and I felt suffocated because there's too much air in my jacket. Eventually, my buddy, who had escaped, came back. He came up. He found me. He managed to get some air out of my jacket and slowly took me back to the boat. But I was really, really scared and panicked because I didn't know, I didn't have the experience to handle the situation. And it was a terrible, terrible experience, a panic attack.
It sounds very frightening, particularly since you were a novice, un novato. I mean, you might have thought that you were going to die. You were going to drown. Yeah.
I was finding it difficult to breathe because of the panic attack and because I'd put too much air in my jacket and it was squeezing my chest. Right. It was squeezing my chest. I'd over-inflated the jacket, put too much air in the jacket.
And I suppose also whenever you got too much air in the jacket, you can't really move very much. It's going to make you just float up to the surface and you won't be able to move along very easily.
Well, you couldn't really swim. I was trying to get back to the boat, but because I was overinflated and panicking, I couldn't put my arms one over the other to swim. I couldn't swim properly. And I've never been diving since. Uh-huh. So maybe I'll have to take a trip up to see Josep in Barcelona so that he can take me back into the water suavemente.
Let's hope that hasn't put you off. That's desanimarte. I hope it hasn't put you off for life, has it?
Well, this was a long time ago and I've had opportunities to dive since then, but my PADI license has expired. It's not valid anymore. So I'd have to retake the qualification. And I think probably that ship has already sailed. It's too late now for me to go back into the water, but maybe we'll see. Have you ever dived?
No, and it's something I'd love to do, but I've just never got round to it. To get round to something means to eventually do something that you've been meaning to do.
Mm-hmm.
I've never got round to it, but after your story and Josep's, now I'm quite keen. I'm quite enthusiastic to finally learn how to scuba dive.
Have you ever suffered a panic attack? Do you know what they're like?
I haven't suffered a real panic attack. I've been stressed at times, but not a genuine panic attack. No, I'm happy to say I haven't.
That's horrible. You really lose control. You lose your motor functions. You kind of lose any connection between your brain and your body so that you can't think properly. You can't think logically. It's a horrible thing. I don't wish it on anybody. It's a really horrible thing.
The diving buddy that you went down with, was he a very experienced diver or was he a novice as well?
He was an experienced diver and he was with friends. So what he wanted to do when we eventually went down was go through these caves with his friends.
Right.
And I understand that. But the point of having a diving buddy is to be there in case your buddy needs you. So I understood that he wanted to go through the caves with his friends, but it shouldn't have been without me. I think he should have waited, been more patient, and realized I was going slowly. And when he disappeared, then I felt very lost and very very unsure of myself. But anyway, true story. If you have a similar story, not necessarily of diving, but it could be maybe a true story of when you had a panic attack that you'd like to share. Send it in. Record your voice. We'd love to hear from you. Before we go, Reza, one final thing, because the point of Josep's story really was how you can improve your English by working abroad. Do we have any final advice or tips for people who want to move abroad for a short or long-term stay? Because we both did it.
Yes, but I guess we're very fortunate that we are English teachers and there's often plenty of work for English teachers around the world because there are always people wanting to learn English. However, if you're a Spanish speaker, there are quite a lot of people who want to learn Spanish as well around the world, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you might be able to get some work as a teacher of Spanish language in an English-speaking country or even any country which isn't necessarily an English-speaking country, but you can improve your English. For example, if you went to, say, Holland, it's virtually like going to an English-speaking country because there nearly everybody speaks English. You know, imagine you went to Holland to teach Spanish, but you yourself could be speaking English every day. Yeah. In the streets of Amsterdam, for example.
That's a really good idea. And not only teaching languages, it's really about exploiting your talents and skills and making the best use of what you can do well. So in Reza and I's case, it's teaching English, but with Josep, it's being a diving instructor. Maybe you're very good at looking after children. Maybe you're very good at repairing cars or fixing plumbing, whatever your skill is. If it's computer, software design, whatever it is, why not take that skill, do it abroad, get paid for it, and improve your English at the same time? And maybe you're planning 6 or 8 months and you end up staying for 16 years.
Like Josep, you mentioned looking after children. That's a very good option. I'm sure everybody's heard of the option of being an au pair. That's A-U-P-A-I-R, an au pair. Many people become an au pair, really, most of all, for the experience of going abroad, finding out about another culture, and improving your English. It's a very, very good way of doing that. You can even earn a little bit of money while you're doing it.
And there is a service called Aula Ingles, A-U-L-A-I-N-G-L-E-S. If you're living in Spain, they mainly deal with the European market. They will help you be placed in a family as an au pair. Now, there's a disclaimer here. They do sponsor or advertise on mansioningles.com, so I want you to know that. But we have been working with them for years, and we've got very good reports on their service. So if you're interested, you could try being an au pair in the UK. So if you'd like to contact us by voice, we remind you that you can go to speakpipe.com/inglespodcast, or you could send us an email with an attached audio or just with a written comment or question. To reach me, you can send me an email to craig@inglespodcast.com.
Or to me, reza@belfastreza@gmail.com.
And to join our Patreon program and support the show, go to patreon.com/inglespodcast. And we'd like to thank our wonderful sponsors, who are Nicolai, Anna, Pedro, Manuel, Maite, Lara, Maria, Sara, Carlos, Zara, Mamin, Juan, Cory, Mariel, Jorge, Raúl, Rafael, Manuel, Agus, Manuel, Néstor from Luces Estrañas, and Juan Carlos. Thank you very much.
Yes, and we also want to thank Armindo from Madrid, Alberto from Granada, and also from Madrid, Angelica Bello, who are continuing to transcribe our episodes. In other words, they're writing out every word that we say. That's a lot of words. And they've done that for episodes 131 to 142. And also, Angelica has gone back and she started at the beginning and she's done episodes 1 and 2 so far. Maybe they've done a little bit more, but we record these podcasts in advance. So perhaps the next time we announce this, you might find that there are 4 or 5 more episodes. We don't know. But in the meantime, thanks very much to all those guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for doing that. Yeah, and we do remind you, we do record these episodes a few weeks in advance, especially coming up to the summer. So this may be recorded a few weeks before you hear it. So on next week's episode, what are we speaking about?
Ah, yes. Yes, that's a good question, Craig. Yeah.
Not sure. Do you know?
It's disfluencies.
Disfluencies.
And discourse markers.
Yeah. All those ums and ahs and things that affect your speech and make it difficult to listen to. I'm really looking forward to that podcast because I like that subject. So thanks for listening today. We hope you'll be listening next week. And until then, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.